welcome to episode 3 of 4J's in a Comic. We are in our new palatial podcasting studio above Waterfront Comics. So hopefully everything sounds a little bit better than the last few times. There won't be drunks outside yelling.
And we shall see. You're chasing around a little bit of buzz in the system, so if that's going on, we apologize in advance.
Tonight we're going to be reviewing 2 Marvel comics, actually. The first one will be Superior Foes of Spider-Man. Try saying that 10 times fast.
Nah.
And this was a book that really surprised me about how good it was. When it was first announced, I had no interest of checking it out. But great Twitter reviews had me check it out, and I absolutely fell in love with this book. The second half of our podcast, we'll be talking about Matt Fraction and David Aja's Hawkeye run. There's 2 trades out that covers 11 issues, and we'll be talking about that.
Awesome.
I can't help but hear Hawkeye.
Hawkeye.
Every time somebody says
Hawkeye. Hawkeye.
I don't think I'll ever call him Hawkeye.
Right, right.
Hawkeye. All right. With me, as always, is JP from Pandamanga.com.
Hey, everybody.
Justin Woods from AskAMetalhead.com.
Hey, what's up?
And our battle axe, Joe Vicious, at the end.
But I do like stuff.
Dude, you just battle axe.
You just like stuff less.
One meh review. And
one my ass, like one. 4.
Maybe.
I'm at the point now where I don't say anything about it until I hear what Joe has to say. And then I'm like, okay, well, let me see. Do I really want to like this now? No, I'm kidding. No.
Peer pressure.
So we're going to get into Superior Foes of Spider-Man first. The first thing I loved is Marvel, at this beginning of their comics, puts a little kind of teaser page about recaps on issues. But it being the first issue, it kind of gives you a little of Superior Foes of Spider-Man. It gives you a little rundown of who the characters are. So I'm going to read that to you guys real quick. Please indulge me. It starts, Boomerang, Shocker, Overdrive, Speed Demon, and the Beetle are not heroes. They're not lovable rogues, and they're not rebels with a cause. Make no mistake, the new Sinister Six are villains, plain and simple. They're liars, cheaters, and thieves. They don't like you. They don't even like each other that much. The one thing they have in common is a shared hatred for their nemesis, the Superior Spider-Man, even if he's possessed by their old boss, Dr. Octopus, at the moment. Sometimes that mutual disdain forces them to suck it up and join forces. Together they are the Superior Foes of Spider-Man. Despite that page, I still kept reading.
Right, and it says the new Sinister Six, all 5 of them.
Right, yes. Right. And he even like says that.
Yeah, they even make fun of that in the comic. It's like, what is happening?
So opening up the first page, we see Boomerang fighting Spider-Man. And it's this great soliloquy, him talking about it. And he says, nobody's ever like, hey, what about that Boomerang? What's what makes that guy tick? Where's he from? What does he do in his spare time? Does he have any pets? And hey, why does he keep letting this guy beat the holy shit out of him? Is he mentally ill? Is it a sex thing? How does a loser like that even get out of bed in the morning?
Oh, man.
It just gets going, like, better for that. So the first few pages, we see a quick origin recap of Boomerang. He was a pitcher who took a bribe and got kicked out of the major leagues. Mm-hmm. And since he happened to be from Australia, the Secret Six approached him and said, you're from Australia. You can be Boomerang.
Right. And the best part was is that they in the recap, it's got a bunch of dudes in red robes looking all ominous that like came into his house. And it says something like, until they showed up. And the first thing he says is this some kind of a sex thing? And they look at each other and they go, Why would this be a sex thing? Right? What is it with that?
Really, because, you know, bunch of strangers enter your room wearing nothing but robes. And
how do you know it's nothing but robes? Why does your mind go there, Boomerang? Shit.
And I love the whole thing. Like, I told them I was born in Australia and they called me Boomerang.
Yeah. Why not? Right?
It's like, what else do they throw in like, Australia? This is why the world hates you. An entire nation boiled down to what you can remember from that time you got high and watched Crocodile Dundee. Like the only thing you can remember was Boomerangs, good. Right?
Shit.
It's better. Luckily, they didn't call him the Shrimp or the Barbie. We're going to name you Weber.
What kills me is how
he has to run around with, like, big grills on his hands.
Well, I mean, the man's suit is so incredibly wacky because he's got a bunch of boomerangs, especially the old suit.
The first suit, oh, right?
Yeah. It's like, how does he do anything? He's got a boomerang, two boomerangs on his chest, one on his hip, or one on each hip. It's like
one on his forehead.
One, yeah. I mean, the one on his forehead, I can see you could kind of fight with,
right?
But I mean, not fight with, used to fight, but fight as in not have it, you know, inhibit your ability to move. But the rest of it's like, you'd be clanging into stuff, you get hooking on things, you're running down an alleyway, and you get grabbed on some kind of a trash can or something.
He's always picking them up. You know it. Oh, he's always falling off.
Oh, absolutely.
Looks like they're just Velcroed on his suit.
Oh, his new suit looks pretty sick, though.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's still going to catch on everything.
I don't recognize...
Once he already passes by it.
True. So I don't really recognize a lot of these super villains, or villains, I guess it's probably more safe to say, than super. But... yeah, I don't really recognize a lot of these guys, and I know I haven't read a lot of Spider-Man in my day, but is that not unreasonable for me not to know who these guys are?
No, I would say it's not unreasonable.
Okay, good.
Yeah. Well, Shocker and Boomerang are... Oh, yeah, we'll get into that.
And then the Speed Demon used to be known as the Whizzer. So, could you imagine...
The Whizzer?
The Shocker and the Whizzer.
The Shocker and the Whizzer.
First you whiz him, then you shock him.
Shit.
But yeah, Shocker and Boomerang, at least, used to be like regulars on the cartoon show, maybe.
Did they start on the cartoon show?
Or they've been in the comics, but they've been around for a while, but they're D-list supervillains.
Yeah, really D-list, yeah. Did you guys see, I guess we just do it. Did you guys see this? There's an image floating around on the internet that is of, well, I guess I'll preface with this. Have you guys seen the damn you iPhone.com sort of stuff?
No.
Where people take screenshots of hilarious spell check problems. Because you can take a screenshot of your phone, right? And so it's autocorrect, right?
Yeah.
So they take a screenshot of their visual text message thing back and forth, where it shows, you know, bubbles on either side, right? So they have one that they made of, it was Shocker and
Electro.
And Electro. And he's like, man, I'm thinking about changing my name. Everybody thinks I have electricity powers. And he's like, you know, and the guy's, and Electro's like, yeah, probably a good choice. And then Shocker's like, yeah, maybe then everybody will stop making fun of me. And Electro goes, that's not why they're making fun of you.
Right.
He goes, why? He goes, do you know what that means? And then the next link is a link to Urban Dictionary/The Shocker. and then he's, oh, period, my, period, God. Which is hilarious because my roommate sent that to me just randomly.
Yeah.
And he didn't even know that I had just recently been reading about Shocker. Just like thought, oh, John will appreciate that. He likes comics.
It was kismet.
So funny.
What was it? Yeah, we always kept expecting you to get a sidekick named Donkey Punch.
I was just going to say, I knew Donkey Punch was coming somewhere. Oh, man.
So awful.
The new D class of superheroes. Yeah, this is Rusty Trombone,
the angry pirate.
Yes.
Anyway, moving on. So the story, right?
Oh, so it is a sex thing.
It is.
Moving on the story, we then see the Shocker. I'm sorry, Boomerang in jail.
You never see the Shocker coming.
But he's in your head now. Yes.
Oh, it's just. You didn't take a breath.
Success.
So it looks like the Boomerang is the leader of this merry band of misfits, right? Mm-hmm.
Sinister, almost six.
Sinister, yeah, exactly. And they're planning some kind of a heist or something.
Well, we see the Boomerang in jail talking to the Shocker and the person formerly known as the Whizzer. Who wants to call him Speed Demon when you can call him the Whizzer?
The Whizzer, right?
I just want to back up. I think one of the things I really liked is there's a particular panel that we're all, I think, looking at. And it's a great way of telling the story that is pretty unique to this, but we'll actually touch on it a little bit in the Hawkeye, where there's these little thought bubbles of what they're all thinking about. And, you know, one guy's talking about, look, this is, you can tell he's saying, look, this is how we're going to make the money. And the other guy's asleep and he's just got a big Z. And then, you know, the Shocker's looking over at Beetle. He's got this big heart and she's got, you know, hers is a Twitter logo. And then later on, hers is a Facebook thumbs up logo.
Right,
I just thought that was so clever for them to do that.
Which I don't think I've really seen them do the thought bubble in a symbol very much. That's pretty...
Right, right.
It's pretty hilarious.
Right. I think I've seen it before, but...
It's rare, yeah, for sure.
But this is a very clever use of it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
exactly. And you instantly knew what they were all...
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, it was a great way to reference...
Well, I mean, take it from somebody who thanks Joe, always has to draw, like, five freaking people in one frame. Like, having five people in one frame, and then having each of them, or even just a couple of them, try and say something, gets... really crowded in a hurry.
Right, right.
And so this is a really interesting way to do it because it gets across exactly what they're thinking and you can read into it, I guess, as much as you want on your own, imagining what's actually going on, but it's more than enough to communicate where each of them are mentally at that moment and still fit it all on the page instead of have just this giant wall of bubbles and text just encroaching in upon the characters.
But I also, the thing I really liked about it, on top of it conveying a lot, is that there's a particular cleverness to it and style that makes it fit in really, really well to sort of like making you want to laugh at it, right? Like, I don't know if it's
self-deprecating.
Yeah, but I mean, but I'm saying like, because he does it, it's done a couple times. There's a couple of moments when he does it. And I just always, when I see it, I think to myself, this is just, it's so great that this is here. Even his own people. Just they don't even give a shit about him, you know?
Oh, yeah. Like, no, they don't even give a shit about him, into helping him.
Yeah, exactly, right?
I love the scene where they're talking and he's, the boomerang is on one side of the prison, you know, phone call booth, and the other two are on the other side, and he's trying to get them to help him, right. And all they're doing is just talking shit the whole time.
He's like, you mean mad shit.
He just can't get a word in edgewise. He's
like, can you just go and pick up this bird seed and deliver it to my apartment so my bird doesn't starve.
And the guy's like, what are you, a pirate?
And he just ran with it and ran with it.
And then my favorite line in that was the wizard going, I would, it's just your apartment. It's really far out. It's Queens and all. And it's creepy. It is what he means. It smells like internet pornography. It's the kind of apartment smart hookers don't go into.
Right?
There's a lot of just really sort of morbid, dark sense of humor, very self-deprecating. It's like these guys, they stubbornly trudge on, still trying to make something of themselves somehow, but they all kind of don't ever, it's like they never, none of them, it's kind of like none of them expect to ever be successful.
Yeah, it's like no wonder these guys get their asses handed to them by just Spider-Man on a regular basis. They can come at him in six and six dozen.
I mean, objectively, several of them have pretty decent powers. They could maybe hold their own. I mean, not against Spider-Man's pretty overpowered, but still. I don't know. It just makes sense. Yeah, I mean, it's just like instead of no, damn you, Spider-Man, you foiled my plans. It's like figures. Like that's their attitude, you know.
Yeah. Well, it kind of interestingly, you know, he kind of alludes to at one point. He's like, you know, I would have gotten away with this. It's the second largest airplane theft, you know, since Luthansa. He goes, but then you know the. The girl at the counter mentions the vault downstairs, right? Like, and so you can almost see, like, just as much as it's in the DNA of a superhero to always do good, even when, you know, potentially it could put them in peril. It's like, it's exactly the opposite, which is these guys are just, they're just wired to be greedy and, you know, they get themselves in trouble because they just don't. They don't
can't
have
stick
a,
to the plan.
Yeah, they just don't have a filter.
And that's what I liked about the next scene. They go to the pet store to pick up this bird seed.
Oh my god.
And then instead of you can't just pick up the bird seed, it's we're going in there and then they get into an argument with someone buying a dog.
Like a little kid.
Yeah, so they
get the name. Little freaking girl.
Over the name of the dog. And then what's he do?
He steals the damn dog.
So it's almost like he's like, give me all the money out of the register
speed demon and stole I'm taking the dog.
And I'm taking your dog just so I can change its name.
Right. Didn't it turn out later that they were picking up something and the guy that worked there was actually in cahoots
with them?
That it was actually a whole, you know, sneaky criminal thing and they fully robbed the boomerang's partner?
But even so funnier is it's like they get all the way to his apartment with this bag of seed and then they realize they left the keys back like across town or something like that.
And the one guy's power is super speed and he's still bitching. Like, yeah, you know how long it takes me to run to Manhattan?
Yeah, he's like, you know how bad that's going to be during traffic, right?
And like, then, of course, he goes and gets it. And then Shocker's like, oh,
the door's unlocked.
Hey, it's unlocked.
Right.
But what is BQE?
Where's that at?
So right when he gets back, he says, phew, BQE, man, I'm telling you. And then, hey, it's unlocked. And I thought I knew what that was, but
I have no idea.
Yeah, BQE, I don't know.
If you know what BQE is, go ahead and go to the contact page on Waterfront Comics and email us.
Is that an ampersand or a Q?
No, it's a Q.
No, it's definitely a Q.
And as they enter the apartment, they go in and find in the bathroom Hammerhead, who's this big mob boss in the Marvel Universe, and they're taking a crap. And he's like, what took you guys so long to bring me the birdseed?
Well, he washed his hands first.
Yeah, but of course he doesn't flush the toilet. He's like, it'll be nice and ripe when he gets home.
When he gets back, he gets down to jail in a month.
He's like, I hope he likes fishing because I left him a striper.
And then they open up, and then Hammerhead goes through the bag to find that it's short of what was supposed to be in there.
Which looks like diamonds.
Yeah. And then you see the wizard run off, leaving the Shocker to get pounded. Which is just a great, funny, funny little sequence in there as well.
Game over, man.
And then, of course, later on, they're in the hospital. And is it Overdrive is the wizard? Wizard or wizard?
Wizard.
Wizard. Like
wizard.
Like I'm going to go take a wizard.
Right. And wizard is not an overdrive.
Wizard is
speed demon. Right.
Overdrive is a like getaway driver.
There you go. There you go. So.
Because it's really for better gas mileage when you're in overdrive.
There you go. You know,
it's a lower gear ratio. So he's probably really efficient when it comes to long distance travel is what I'm thinking.
Long distance escapes. Yes.
Right.
I hope down the road, like if they show him. That like his getaway vehicle's like a Prius.
That'd be amazing. Shit. No, that's awesome. I love the scene where Speed Demon is sitting next to Shocker in the hospital. Shocker's just beat the hell up. And it's just laughing.
His jaw's wired shut.
Yeah, it's like they work together, but they're also begrudgingly just douchebags to each other.
Hmm.
So after they're in the hospital, then the Boomerang convinces them to pull a job so they can bail him out, and they have a bigger job lined up with Hammerhead. So you cut to a scene where the Beetle, who's the new Beetle, female...
Yeah, she's Beetle 6, I think. Oh, man.
She's the one with boobs.
Yes. What is her powers?
She has a Beetle suit.
She can fly, I think.
It's like, imagine like a scaled-down Iron Man suit.
Okay.
Really scaled down.
But so she's a little stronger and she can fly.
Yeah.
Basically.
Okay.
So where do they go to get money to bail him out?
They go and rob a comic book store.
And the comic book geeks are giving her a hard time. She's like, I don't know, give me something that is worth something. And they start arguing over what comic is worth more.
She's like, which one of these are valuable? And he's like, that depends. Are you looking for 1 in 100 variants, low print and run indie titles? And then she's like, this is so impenetrable. And then she's like, just put everything in a box for me. And they're like, you want bags and boards with that? It just had me absolutely rolling on the floor.
The other thing, they're at gunpoint, and the guy's like, she's hot, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, they're totally. Fully checking her out.
Yeah, they're totally.
So I have a gun.
It must be so strange to be in a world where you sell comic books about superheroes and villains, and there are superheroes and villains in your world. Like, that'd be hilarious. Joe, idea for a comic book. Like, we should do a comic book about some friends that own a comic book store in a world where there are comic book superheroes.
Hmm.
Like masked vigilantes with superpowers and supervillains with superpowers.
I can't help but think it's been done.
Really? Where? Like,
I don't know, but that's too good an idea.
It'd be hilarious. Well, yeah, you're right. It's probably somebody's been... Doesn't mean we can't.
And Garth Ennis's The Boys, they did a whole riff on that.
Okay. Oh, did they?
Yeah.
Well, you know, in the old days, the dime store, you know, the penny... The little penny readers or whatever they were called, you know, back in the 1820s and stuff, they were all about, you know, Jesse James and all of those guys. And so you had these sort of real life, you know, villains, I guess, you know, really they were bandits and also, you know, the deputies and guys, like they had little dime store novels. That's what they were, dime store novels that were written about these guys. So, you know, that's a very similar vein. But imagine if it was a little bit more exaggerated and it was... comic book heroes. That would be pretty interesting. So back to the comic book store and the Beetle, you know, they're like gawking at her because she's a chick. And I thought to myself, how did this guy get in my head? Because that would probably be me going, you know, God, she's got a gun, but she's kind of hot, right? Like, hey, after this, you know, you want to go coffee?
That whole, like, hate to see
you. Because I just want to get, yeah. Like, I want to get into the suit.
You can leave the mask on. Yeah.
You can leave the mask on, yes. As long as the rest of her suit is made out of the stuff they make yoga pants out of, I'm in.
There you go. This comic just caught me off guard with how funny it was. I think that in the last podcast I said that it's sort of candor was something that really caught me off guard. This just so raw and honest, and I don't know, almost a little bleak with these guys' lives. But at the same time, they managed to have this wry sort of humor about it, which just works really well.
Well, they make their living getting the shit kicked out.
Well, I don't know how much of a living they make. They have to bail themselves out constantly, and are always up to try and find some other job.
I really liked it a lot. What it reminded me of was, lately I've been getting into Richard Stark's Parker novels. And Stark is a pen name for the author Donald Westlake. Mm. And Donald Westlake wrote another series called the Dortimer series. And they started out as Parker novels, but he made them so funny that they didn't fit in that world. So this was like that. It was, you know, a bunch of thieves and all the crap that, while they were trying to pull the job, it just kept going wrong and wrong. Mm. And hilarity ensued. So I don't know if that Nick Spencer was inspired by those at all, but that's where, you know, it put a smile on my face, reminding me of those.
So explain to me, as the newbie of the group, because I don't know a lot of these villains and stuff, but Hammerhead turns out to be the Chameleon, correct?
Mm-hmm.
So is Chameleon sort of a long-standing...
Yeah, he actually appeared in Spider-Man number one.
Okay, yeah. So he's an old school.
Yeah.
So saying all of this, I think it is still noted that there is an interesting plot and that's going on here, that while Spider-Man is just in the very periphery of it, and now you're looking at it from the other side of the coin, mm-hmm. there is an interesting, there's a very interesting sort of plot that goes on.
There's definitely a good story going on beneath the surface, even though the major selling point of this first issue, and arguably I would be surprised if the first couple issues, is the tone and the wry sarcasm of the characters. But it does seem like they're going somewhere interesting with the actual plot as well. Right.
At this point, they have no idea what they're doing, but it kind of alludes that something big is going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, there's already some intrigue and lies going on, mm-hmm. which, you know, not surprisingly, considering it's all a bunch of supervillains. So.
Yeah, like, you get the sense that Boomerang could make it. Like, he's on the precipice of being, you know, he's on the bubble. Like, he could make it, except for the problem is he has to rely on these morons to, like,
right,
you know, like, they couldn't. and that was what was so interesting about the whole, like, when you get through the pet store and you realize that that was a job that they almost, all you had to do, you had one job, just go get the bag of food and bring it to my apartment, and they barely could function through that, right?
Well, they're too controlled by their base reaction. They're so reactionary.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Like, that's the problem with all these villains here. That's why they're D-list villains, is because they're so reactionary. They have no self-control whatsoever. Right. They're like, they can't get into a situation and go, no, eyes on the prize. We just got to get what we came for. Don't let this little kid bother me. No, we're going to get mad. We're going to take off our trench coats and rob the store because I don't like the name of this dog. Right. Like, what the hell?
Exactly.
You know how easy it would be to be a petty criminal in a world like that?
Well, like, this is...
You could, something that lights up and makes a sound on your wrist... Oh. And just pointed at people and said, give me all your money.
So like, what does that do? You don't want to know.
Exactly. So you haven't heard of me.
What's the scene from Tropic Thunder where Nick Nolte's like, I don't know. I just know the sound it makes when it kills or something like that. Like, he's asking him about his gun.
Oh, yeah, what kind of gun did you use?
I don't know. I just know the sound it makes when I pull the trigger or something like that. Yeah. Something stupid, right? This is definitely something I would have never, ever picked up off the shelf. And so when I read it, I was giggling through the whole thing. And I was like, you know, I got to the end and I was like, that's it. There's no, where's the rest of it? So
next month.
It's a good start of a, that's where it is. It's a good start. So definitely I would suggest checking it out. Even though I told totally you most of it, you know?
Yeah, right. We did, but still exciting.
Oh, by the way, spoilers.
Yeah, you know, to be fair, though, by the time this podcast comes out, number two will likely be out or about to be out.
Right.
Will it be out?
About to be out.
About to be out. There you go.
Yeah. So next week, come and grab both.
And just another touch on it. Steve Lieber did the art, and I had tweeted how much I liked this comic. And he was nice enough to send me a sketch in the mail of the Shocker being beat up by Spider-Man.
That was totally
Which
cool.
Which is man. Amazing.
That was totally cool.
That's what's so great about Twitter and, well, specifically Twitter, but all the social media, but especially Twitter. Because you don't have to be friends with Steve Lieber to be able to interact with him. Yeah. You know,
right.
Like Rucka retweeted or tweeted back and forth with John a little bit. It's just like, damn, that's awesome. That sort of stuff happens on Twitter. Yeah, you get this interconnectivity. Cool. It's pretty amazing.
Going around the table, everyone gives us a thumbs up.
Yeah,
oh, definitely. Thumbs up. Absolutely. Yeah. I don't mean do. You, I don't think we should do a score yet because there's not really enough of it to know. But this is definitely a go get it and rent, buy go this.
Get it, check find it out. It.
Yeah, for sure.
And put a smile on your face if your humor is anything like ours.
Right. It seems to be following a trend in comics that. A trend in successful comics that instead of it just being a simple, oh, bad guy doing this, good guy fight bad guy win sort of thing. It's digging deeper and deeper into the humanity of the characters.
Right, right.
And less about the big grand scale story. Mm-hmm. Although that's happening there. But it seems like what is compelling and moving forward, where as we all get more mature in our tastes, it seems like that is what is more interesting and compelling. And it seems to be that the comic book industry, at least at times, is really responding to that kind of growing taste. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah.
All right, so let's take a little quick break. Well, now that we've reviewed Superior Foes of Spider-Man, we are moving on to Hawkeye. There are two trade paperbacks out right now. The first one that collect issues 1 through 5 was called My Life is a Weapon, and the second one that collected issues 6 through 11 is called Little Hits. We'll start with the beginning and talk about the first 5 issues of Hawkeye.
And talk about humanizing a character.
Yes, these two books were a really brilliant choice to talk about together, John.
Yeah. Hawkeye has always been kind of stuck in the periphery of the Avengers books. They've countless false starts with series of him, right?
Yeah, again, like Superior Foes of Spider-Man, when this one came out, I had no plans of enjoying this at all.
Oh, I did.
I was reading an interview with Matt Fraction.
You're just an archer.
Wait. What did the Battle Axe just say?
Now, the second I heard that Matt Fraction was doing a Hawkeye run, I was like, all right, when is the soonest I can get to John's?
You were a fan of his Iron Fist run too, right?
His Iron Fist was so good.
And David Aja did the art on that one as well.
Yeah,
right?
He did most of it.
Like I said, I had read an interview with Matt Fraction that they did about 4 months ago at Heroes Con, and he said, this is the first Hawkeye book to ever make it past issue 9.
That's saying something.
Yeah.
So Hawkeye has a long history of just flopping.
Well, he's had a few miniseries, and then he had like
the solo Avengers.
Yeah. So he's had some success, but it's been on a smaller scale. Like, we're just going to tell this story, not an ongoing story.
And he's always worked better as a supporting character, in my opinion, than as running your own book.
So do you think that any of the success of Hawkeye in this particular series, outside of what I would, what I would say is really excellent writing, is due to perhaps timing and the fact that in the last couple of years we've had Hunger Games, which is a strong character that uses a bow, and Brave, which is a strong character that uses a bow, and then now you're on the back of the, sort
the
of
Avengers, the Avengers where we actually got to see him.
I think it's more about
just the writing.
New writing and the buzz it's gained that way. Because after the first Avengers movie, they did a couple of Hawkeye limited series that didn't have any traction. I was lucky to sell like 6 copies.
Wow.
I think the Archer thing is not what gives this its surprising quality. They don't romanticize that in any way. It doesn't have the almost martial arts sort of thing. Because when you're dealing with something that's like that, you get that practicing, respecting a well-developed skill.
Right.
There's a couple of scenes of that where he's showing off for Kate Bishop.
But it's all to support the the relationship there.
Yeah,
it's not so much it's not so much romanticizing the archery, which is sort of like really the only thing they could do, piggybacking on what's been going on with archers being in popular culture a lot.
I buy that. I wasn't looking for any other, it came up in something that I thought about.
It's definitely been in the popular culture consciousness a lot, archery, for sure.
I bet it's made it easier for the character to be
Justin and I know is both of our kids are now like all into wanting to learn how to
experience.
Well, so you know, I do little dates with my kids where I'll take my kids and go do things. My son will go, well, you know, we'll go do this, and my daughter I'll take and go do that. And one of the things my son and I ended up doing was, and it didn't come from in either of the movies. It actually came from a friend of mine mentioning it years ago. Was I wanted to go shoot a bow and arrow, and I thought that would be really cool. So I did some research, found a place in, you know, close to us, and we went, and we got lessons, and it was really fun and really cool. And they were really cool people as well. So I ended up taking my daughter. She loved it. So we all three, we really enjoyed it. And so I asked her, just has Brave and Hunger Games helped you guys? And she goes, oh my God, it's ridiculous. Like, it's amazing how many people have come in here because of, you know, sort of because of that. Oh, right?
I'll bet. Yeah.
So, and that's why I asked, but the writing and the art in this are, you know, it's not any, that question wasn't to put down.
Sure.
The, you know.
So now I got a question for you, Joe, because you seem to be a longtime Hawkeye fan.
Yes.
Right. So is the character, the personality of Hawkeye in this different than he has been in the past? Because I know that it's all sort of a, you know, it's all malleable in the comic world, more or less.
There's been some changes, but the really good stuff, like his constant just fuck ups with women. He's had what, 2 ex-wives now? Yeah. And oh man, has dated all different of the super heroines, and they like multiple at the same time that didn't know it about each other.
Which in the second trade plays a big, big role.
Oh God. Yeah. When all of his exes are all there at the same time. I saw that scene and they all have the playing card on their head. I'm like, oh God, what has he gotten himself into?
Yeah. I was trying to figure what game they were playing, but
so he's not a different character this time around. That's not like, it's not like, oh, a new take on Hawkeye and now he's going to be interesting.
He's not as like gruff and silly, I think, as he used to be. There's still a little bit of that, but he doesn't have the, hey, let's have a barbecue after every mission sort of thing that he had like in the West Coast Avengers.
Yeah, really?
In the
90s. Okay. Yeah. Interesting.
So I'm glad you brought that up, because that was one of the things that I was going to ask, because obviously my only experience with this particular character was the movie. And after reading this and getting a sense for who he was or who he is, there's a lot more. He's got a very cavalier attitude.
Very.
And I didn't get that in the movie at all. And the first question in my head that I had after I finished reading this was, why did Jeremy Renner play him like that? Now, I realized that he's the heavy in the movie, but there's this, you know, sort of very serious. There's never a moment where, like, I can't even think of a moment where he cracks a smile in the entire movie. And that doesn't seem like this guy that I read.
Well, that was something from the movie that bugged me a little bit. He spent pretty much the entire movie possessed.
Right.
How the movies work is, I'm going to bring it to a little nerd level, is the movies are based more on the ultimate version of the characters. The ultimate line was created in about 2000. You know, the pitch line was, what if the Marvel Universe happened now? So that they reintroduced Spider-Man first, then the X-Men, and then the Ultimates, which are essentially the Avengers. And it was a more modern take. And then they introduced Nick Fury to be a Samuel L. Jackson lookalike, and they got that for the movie. So
because he used to be, I mean, early on, Nick Fury was white.
Yeah, in the regular 616, that's the main Marvel Universe.
Yeah, universe number 616. Yeah.
He's a guy who was in World War II and, you know, and a white guy in World War II. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so the Ultimate Universe kind of changed that up, and that's kind of what they do. All the movies have sort of been like. The Avengers movies and such from that. Although now, with the success of the movies, the 616 Marvel Universe is going that way. So Nick Fury's illegitimate son, who happens to look like Samuel L. Jackson, has just been reintroduced into the Marvel Universe along with his pal Phil Coulson.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and going, and now they are head of S.H.I.E.L.D. And
this Nick Fury just happens to have an eye patch too.
Right.
Go figure.
Quick, throw some fairy dust on it and change it.
So that's kind of the nerd answer for why the Hawkeye dramatizations have been different. It follows kind of the ultimate character a lot more. It was
a former dick.
Yeah. he's lost his family, and yeah, he's much more
seemingly a lot darker than this guy.
A lot darker than this one. What I really liked about this, getting into the first trade, was the first page of most of the comics opened with this line: "Okay, this looks bad." This looks
bad. It's always in the always middle of trouble.
So, like, the first scene is him falling out a window, you know, with his bow notched. Okay, this looks bad. The next scene is him landing on the roof of a cab, where he's in the hospital now for 6 weeks after he's fractured all these bones. Right.
And then I think what the next one is them falling into a pool with bullets shooting down after them.
And then so later on in there, we're introduced to the people. Hawkeye gets out of the hospital, kicks the wheelchair down the middle of the road, gets run over. The wheelchair gets run over, and we get introduced to the apartment complex where he lives, where Russian mobsters have happened to bought it.
Are they Russian? Because he goes on and off, like, when they're talking, there will be a subtitle there that usually has the words, and you'll see underneath translated from the Russian. But while they're talking, it's like, blah, 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 something that sounds kind of Russian, maybe, I don't know.
Yeah, it's like his perspective. That was really great.
Yeah.
It happens with a couple different languages. Right. He does it with Italian.
Something in Russian. Something
right,
in
yeah,
Russian.
Exactly. It's like clearly him just like, oh, whatever.
But I think they're definitely Eastern European of some.
Definitely.
And they call everyone
bro.
Bro, yeah. Bro.
That's, come on, bro.
That's no good. That's no good, bro. No.
Why do you do this, bro?
I love that he calls him Tracksuit Mafia. That's the greatest name ever.
Yes.
And they're all driving minis.
Yep.
Which, yeah, I love.
That's amazing.
This is the least imposing vehicle that a gang could take around.
I really enjoyed the way that the story timeline was shuffled around a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Which, to me, always shows very confident storytelling. Either that or it's going to crash and burn. It's really the reality. Like, if you're going to tell something that's out of sequence and with simple visual cues, make it make sense in the end as you draw the strings together.
Yeah.
That is challenging. And I think that as a writer, you'd have to be skillful to be able to make that work. And so I always get excited when I see, when I am reading something and I go, whoa, wait, is that before or after what just happened? Because then I think to myself, oh, cool, I'm going to get to see somebody who's skillful pull all these different little things together. Like specifically the one with him and the dog and the Tracksuit Mafia, and the way that that story kind of jumps around in its timeline. And because it starts with him with the dog, and then it goes away, and like the dog's fine, and then you find out slowly, eventually, you find out how the dog gets hurt. And it's just like a really brilliant way to make this sort of story weave together. And it sort of feels disjointed at first, but it ends up coming together beautifully.
And what they did to the dog made me hate those.
Oh, right?
Yeah,
so yeah, dude.
Those guys are bastards.
F those guys. And you know what? It makes the character, makes Hawkeye really believable, because he seems like he would be a dog person.
Yeah, kind of, huh?
He's like, this isn't my dog, but you need to save its life, to the vet. Because basically, he's trying to buy the building from the Russian mafia.
Well, at first, he's trying to just pay everybody's rent or something. And then,
right.
Yeah, I guess it kind of all happened at once. But yeah, I mean, these guys are trying to muscle everybody out by tripling their rent because they want to sell it and make money.
Right.
They're just being jerks. And he comes in, he's like, man, I got money. I'll pay for stuff. And they just don't want to, they don't want to play. They don't want to deal with him.
Yeah.
And so they're just jerks.
I love that he robs them and then pays and then buys the building.
You robbed us by buying the building. That made me laugh so much. So, like I said, the first issue introduces us to Lucky the Pizza Dog, the Tracksuit Mafia, and some of the neighbors, Grills, and the other neighbors that are in the building, which come to play major roles down the line. The second issue is the circuit. It starts again with "Okay, this looks bad." Is Hawkeye is being shot at into a pool, and it's basically a reintroduction of the 70s villain Circus of Crime, which
is where he got his start as a villain.
Well, he was in the Circus.
He was a villain originally?
Yeah, Hawkeye.
Oh, interesting. I did not know that.
He was under the...
They kind of alluded here and there that he used to be a thief.
He was originally introduced as a thief, along with the Black Widow, who at that time was a Russian spy, and he was her paramour that was doing things nefariously with her. But that was, he was quickly made a hero maybe like a year or so later. He was an Iron Man villain to start out with her, and then a year or so later was reformed. And,
right, because in the movies, he's introduced in Thor as just part of S.H.I.E.L.D., yeah. sort of in the wings.
Now, again, yeah, again, it's the Ultimate versus the 616.
Right, right.
You know, we're in the 60s when the Cold War was going on and all that, it was a lot more Russians are evil.
Right, right.
They'll turn our good American boys into...
Mindless love slaves.
Mindless love slaves.
To the Black Widow.
Sign
she
me
had
up.
Long fishnets. And
I raise my hand. Huh. Russian love slave does not sound like a bad thing. I mean, seriously.
No, and her costume back then was all fishnets and a mask and a cape. It totally looked like a dominatrix.
Nice.
Meow. One of the things I really liked about each one of these is, much like at the beginning of the... Superior Foes of Spider-Man, they have that little blurb sort of on the first page about, you know, this is who we are or this is where they're not. But in the Hawkeye, every single one has a couple little sentences. And at the end of it, it's like, didn't we cover this already? Or like, it's really cute that you read this again. Like, and every episode, it like starts to make fun of you a little bit. And so like every time I would read it every single time and, you know, it would chuckle and then go on. And I think it really set the tone for the rest of the rest of the book.
Yeah, so the first five issues were really, really fun. The most fun I had was when it got to issue 5 and Hawkeye and the female Hawkeye, who was in the Young Avengers when Hawkeye was dead.
Yeah, he's one of them.
One of them guys.
So Hawkeye died? Okay.
And he got better.
Okay. Yes. Just pretend we never wrote that
line. Yeah.
I love it when he comes back in, what was it, the New Avengers series? There's a whole issue of him, like, stumbling around the city, like, okay, I could have sworn I was dead a minute ago. I was flying into an engine on an alien spacecraft, and now I'm in downtown. This isn't good.
Through the miracle of comic book magic.
But issue 5 had this great, when they do the sound effects thing, and it shows, you know, Hawkeye shooting through this glass window, and the sound effect is literally K-G-L-A-S-S. Glass! Glass! And then he jumps into it where he just broke the glass, not realizing he didn't have shoes on.
That's awesome.
And they had me laughing out loud.
And didn't you say that... Later in this, even after the second trade, it gets dark.
Well, about halfway through the second trade, I really thought it took a turn to kind of on the dark side.
When the redhead starts really manipulating him, he is so boned.
Yeah, we meet this redhead in issue 3, where Hawkeye sees this pretty girl driving a 1970 Challenger, and then we flash back to, again, okay, this looks bad, where Hawkeye's driving this Challenger being chased by 5 minis that have 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5, each painted on the side.
Yeah. Is it the Tracksuit Mafia again, maybe? Yes,
the Tracksuit Mafia. And we learn later that she's actually the wife of one of them and has stolen some stuff and is escaping in this car. So, and then that leads down the road. So it was really fun for the first 5 in the first trade. The second trade actually opens with issue 7. It's a little bit out of order because that's the special Hurricane Sandy special issue that Matt Fraction put together. And
6 was or 7 was?
7 was. But in the trade, it goes 7, then 6 through the rest. Basically, it starts with Hawkeye. It's 2 stories. The first one is Hawkeye helping his friend Grills go to the dad's house.
Right.
To kind of get some stuff out and rescue the dad from the flood. From the flood.
Mm-hmm. But there's an incident that happens later on that we're either going to talk about or not talk about. I'll let you lead the way on that. I think that it probably wouldn't have been as impactful had you not gone and seen some of this guy's life, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Going and seeing the father and spending time with the guy that, you know. So Grills, everybody just calls him Grills. And he's so laid back and so mellow that, you know, his name is Gil, but everybody calls him Grills. And he
because
just
he barbecues.
Yeah, Grills, like, right, he barbecues, yeah, every day. You know, the story is like they go back, they go, I'm assuming it's Louisiana, right?
No, it's Hurricane Sandy.
Oh, okay, so, okay, yeah, it's Jersey.
Jersey. And,
Jersey,
and
right?
They were going to Queens.
Okay, so they went to Queens. I'm sorry. I suck at hurricanes.
but, good?
What's that?
Is that good?
No, that's not good. It's not good.
You have -5 for hurricanes.
Yeah, right. no, I just thought that the story taking him there to go help and sort of seeing who he is as a person beyond, you know, the guy that just grills every night. That's what sort of reeled you in and then just really pummels you sort of when this thing happens.
But it had, I think, one of the funniest lines I read in the series when he's talking to the Grills about we're going to Far Rockaway, and he's like, oh, like in the Ramones song?
Right, right.
And they're like, and he's like, who's that? And then they're driving, and he's like, what was the last name of their singer that died?
Right. I love that he can't put a stereo together.
And there's a diagram.
Yeah.
Oh man.
Some of the art, or some, you know, some of the art in this is really, really well done.
And then the second story in the Hurricane Sandy had another great line when Clint and Kate are arguing about going. He's like, "Why would you want to go to Jersey?" And they're arguing over Brooklyn versus Jersey, Jay-Z versus Springsteen. And then she's like, "Jersey has the greatest name in rock, Bruce." And then he cuts her off and he's like, yes, Bruce Kulick, the guitarist from Kiss.
From Kiss. I know.
I'm glad you drove from Brooklyn. And that, another one just had me smiling. And then so that was the Hurricane Sandy issue. And then we move into issue 6, which is in Christmas time. And Hawkeye has to call in Iron Man to help him hook up his home media.
Yes.
Which is just the funniest damn thing. It's like bringing the really, really big guns.
Bringing the smart guy. Right? Yeah,
right. And the even funnier thing about it was then Iron Man can't even figure it out. He's like, let's just throw this stuff away and I'll get
you
some new
stuff. I'll go buy some new stuff.
So, no, I have money. How'd you get money? It was kind of I don't know. And that kind of starts the like, oh no, what have you done, yeah, sort of trend that he's going.
And about halfway through that, I think that's where it kind of starts to get dark, because mm-hmm, you see that the Tracksuit Mafia is really still pissed at him over the building and the redheaded chick.
Mm-hmm.
And you see him, the Tracksuit Mafia start to threaten him and the people that he has there. And that's when he realizes he needs to be their protector.
Yeah.
I love in 8, I don't know if we're up to 8
yet. Yeah, we're up to 8.
I love the little, you know, every 7 or so pages, there's, as part of the story, it gives you this little comic book cover.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I thought that was really, really neat.
Very cool.
Yeah, because the first time, at first I thought, when the first one comes up, I thought, oh, that's an interesting ad. Like, I thought it was, you know, I was like, oh, the art's pretty good on that ad. Maybe I'll ask John about that. And then I get to the next page. I'm like, oh, wait, that's her. It's on the counter in the actual story. Mm-hmm. I love the very first page of this book.
Loves of Hawkeye.
The paneling is so interesting. Like, it tells this great story in little snapshots. And it's
there's a couple times where they do a lot of sort of, you know, long, thin vertical panels squished together like that. It's almost a little daring. But it's done so masterfully that you don't wonder which one to read next.
There's a great symmetry to it, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, not even so much this one. This one earlier on where he's talking on the phone after, I think it's like issue 3, I want to say, where he gets back from dealing with the circus guy. No, the circus guy. Yeah, circus guys, mm-hmm, right? And he and Kate are talking on the phone. And he's like, oh, I don't want to, you know, sleep with you. And, you know, starts putting his foot in his mouth.
Right.
And that the phone conversation is done in those sort of interesting little frames, but they're kind of scattered around a little bit, but they flow really well. And I can remember when I first thumbed through and looked at that page, I thought to myself, it'll be interesting to see how I naturally want to read it and if it's going to be in order. And it totally was. And that's so difficult to get to work right, especially if you're going to do something kind of offbeat and interesting about that with the frame pacing. But it flowed really well. The layout was brilliant.
Mm-hmm. But one of the absolute best parts of issue 8 is in the art, which I'm not a connoisseur on, but something I noticed that I just freaking loved. They used a screen print for all the dresses that the girls were wearing.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
No wonder what angle she was at, it was always like the same print.
Yeah, there's this neat, like, on purpose flat quality to things at times. There are some different colors and gradation to suggest shadow, but by far and away, each thing is just, each person is one color. You know, the skin is one color, the hair is one color, the shirt is one color. And I don't know how to describe it. It's so interesting because you'd think, wow, that would make it look really flat, but it totally doesn't.
It's almost like
really clean.
It almost looks like cell shaded.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly. Bit. But even in cell shading, you typically have
gradients,
a clean delineation of, okay, here's blue for his shirt, but then down here where there would be shadow, there's a dark blue sort of suggestion of shadow. Mm-hmm. It's just a hard line. There's no fade. But they don't even do that most of the time. There's just one color for each thing.
And then maybe black if the shadow's darker.
Right. Oh, and then there was...
Whoever inked this was a badass.
There are some scenes that almost look solarized.
I think Ahmad did it all himself.
Did he really?
Yeah.
Well, there's some scenes that are solarized almost. There's some scenes where there's the scene that particular comes to mind is one from I think issue 3 where they're like with that very first scene where they're getting shot at as they're falling into the pool. Mm-hmm. And there are some people standing around the pool and they're black and their swimsuits are white. And the bullets are black and the background is purple. And it's this crazy, like, just weird look. It almost reminds me of that one scene in Kill Bill where she is, I'm going to say that's number one, where she's fighting.
She's in the restaurant, right?
Yeah, she's in the restaurant and she gets attacked by all those guys and they do this, like, blue light behind her.
Right.
And the shadows are fighting and it's just slick. And that's what it reminded me of immediately.
What this made me think of is that they used color to develop familiarity. So you immediately knew who a character was based on the color of
Yeah, they
of
had like a color character. Scheme to them.
And so I'll share something that I never knew that this even was something that would exist, but there's a game called TF2 or Team Fortress 2 that you know many of us play. And in the development of this game, they wanted to make the silhouette of every character recognizable at any distance. And so when you look at that character, you immediately recognize what it is. And this has a very, very similar parallel to that in that because there's so many women sort of at this stage, there's the three or four women, you know, looking at a particular page, I know exactly who Red is because she's got red hair and red boots. And I know who Hawkeye is because he's got the purple shirt and I recognize the purple car. And so I think it's very much a way that they use to tell the story without over saturating.
Sure.
It's interesting that it's done that way.
Yeah. The art is very economical.
That's
they
a good
get
word
the most
it.
Amount of information with the least amount of lines and pen work. I don't want to say there's not a lot of pen work. There is. But I guess what I'm saying is that it's not over-rendered. It's such a perfect expression of the defining features of each of these characters. And it's just so clean. It's so clean. The art in this is very unique looking and very sharp. I just really, really, really like the art a lot. I would love to see some of the not colored sections because this one, the pen is so incredibly clean that it wouldn't look cluttered and hard to understand without the color. I would love to see some of just the inking because it's beautiful. It's beautiful.
So if I said that this has a quality to it that reminds me of a bit of. It's got an old noir quality to it.
Absolutely.
I think that's
totally heavy use of shadow for sure. Mm-hmm. Which is wild because the characters and the art is very often one solid color for a particular object.
But I mean, even in the line work, the way that it's not a super detailed face, right?
A very common thing to do in noir sort of stuff is a good place to look is the eyes. Are they drawing the eyelids and the outline of the eye and the rendering the iris and the pupil and all those little things, all those details. And a lot of the time in a noir book or something like this, they render the shadow of the eye and they tell a lot by that. There's not half the time you don't even ever see an actual iris or white of the eye. It's just the shadow of the forehead casting down onto the cheek. But it still manages to be so expressive. It's very, very cool.
And talking about the negatives, we're just looking at a page in issue 8 where all the bad guys have gotten together and say, all right, Hawkeye has stolen from us. Who is going to kill him? And there's this great scene of this big white table and the Kingpin standing at the end. And the table's white, his suit's white, and it all kind of merges in.
Right, and it's like a silhouette of him.
Yeah. It's very impending.
Yeah, it's so cool. Yeah. Yeah. It makes him feel bigger than he is, you know?
And he's already big.
He's a big man, yeah. Kingpin always felt to me like the idea of Kingpin as a character seems cumbersome to draw and fit into frames, but it's always been such powerful imagery. He manages to be, because he is so kind of oddly shaped,
mm-hmm.
that he manages to be imposing and not just wrong-looking somehow, which is really kind of cool.
Yeah.
And they really use that to great effect in this scene. In this, you can tell right away, talking about the silhouettes again, there's a couple of scenes where, again, it's not over-rendered and the art is very economical and all the little details. And so you just, at a cursory look, you can see that his girth and his shape, it's like, oh, that's Kingpin. Like, immediately, you can tell, even before they go into the face and go, oh, yeah, that's definitely Kingpin.
I think, as a whole, this is the type of comic that, again, you know, it's something that I would have never picked up myself because mm-hmm. I'm not really a superhero guy. Like, but this immediately made me a fan. After the first couple pages, as soon as the guys start talking and every line is bro, hey bro, hey bro, and Tracksuit Mafia. Like, I was like, this is so clever and funny. This is totally my personality. Like, it's sharing all the, you know, the inside jokes with you, right? Like, that's something that they do really well in this. And so the thing that aggravates me is here we are talking about how great this particular Hawkeye is and how either, you know, sort of mediocre the others are. It aggravates me that a hero can live and die based on who is writing or who is drawing the character. And I wish, what is the solution for that so you can minimize it happening? And we know that you can't have the same writer working on the same thing forever. Yeah. So, I mean, what do you do?
Well, to me, I think that really is the magic of comics. When everything clicks, you get the right artist working with the right writer who has the right colorist on the right character.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and if it was a formula, everyone would do it. But it's just the magic of it. It's, you know, as a musician.
Everybody has a bad album, right? Or like, I mean, you know, you can very easily look at certain artists' collections of music and go, yeah, this wasn't the best album ever.
Mm-hmm.
But for this, there's this intangible quality that I don't know that I can describe that comics have where it's what makes you so nerdy about something. You buy into it. You know, is what makes a guy, you know, for whatever sports team he's a fan of, whenever they win, he feels great. Whenever they lose, he feels like crap. Your whole day is ruined when your favorite football team gets their ass kicked by the crappiest team in the league. Like, you take that on. You have this sort of, it's like sympathy. It's like gaining sympathy weight when your wife is pregnant, right? It's like you take on an emotional weight for this. So
it's the connection you get with the characters. It's so deep because literature has always done that. And now you're adding the visual representations with the literature and that fantastic escapism that comics are always based on.
Right? That's it.
It's really like the most engaging possible medium.
You're living vicariously through this fantastic character. Mm-hmm. And so that's, you know, for me, that's the thing. Like,
and you want it to always be.
You
awesome.
Want it to be. Yeah, I want it to be.
So I think that maybe
you relate to it in a way.
What comes up for me when you say that is that the very situation that you said makes you frustrated, mm-hmm. that is inconsistent.
Mm-hmm.
That very same situation that allows for there to be sometimes good, sometimes bad. You know, and you're asserting that why can't it always be awesome? I think the very fact that it is dynamic like that can make it so that any character can, on a long enough timeline, get to be awesome. That nobody's ever stuck just being awesome or just being terrible. That have some characters that stumble around. You can have some runs of something that don't work. But because it can be so dramatically better or worse, depending on the people that are working on it, mm-hmm. you can, on a long enough timeline, get something that comes out that's like, oh, shit, that's awesome. Now, at the same time, it'd be great if it was always awesome. But I guess I'm happy that it can be good or bad because bad happens. And so it's mm-hmm. nice to know that eventually we get good.
You appreciate the good more, right?
Absolutely. Yeah.
I guess my last point on this, and really sort of the underlying thing, is that we kind of know that comic books are, you know, it's a fickle industry, right? I think even the short amount of time that I've been involved with hanging out with you guys and getting to understand, you know, comics from a business perspective and listening to some of the guys talk at some of the K-Rock comments or con was how, you know, if something doesn't do well, you know, and it doesn't sell X number of copies, like, that's it. It's gone. So maybe you have a character that you just love, and maybe the first five books are phenomenal, and then six sucks, or, you know, whatever it happens to be, whatever the series is, or there's a really good, you know, there's a really good first series, the second series isn't very good, that comic loses money,
and no one else is reading it but you.
Right. That's what it feels like sometimes. Right,
exactly. But, you know, the fact that it has the unfortunate opportunity, let's say, an opportunity, you know, I'll use that word sparingly, but the opportunity to go away forever. That's, I think, the thing that, what if, you know, there's a chance we would have never, ever had this version of Hawkeye. Somebody was like, well, he doesn't do, you know, we're not getting 450,000 sales or whatever the number is, but, you know, we'll give it a shot anyway.
Yeah, there's probably somebody who was an opponent to this happening.
Oh, yeah, you know, so the last Hawkeye run didn't sell, so we'll give you a 3-issue contract.
Right. And unfortunately, it's people like me that's the hardest on that.
Yeah.
You know, because, you know, the last Hawkeye series I was lucky to sell 6 books of.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Matt Fraction Iron Man had dwindled down, you know, so it wasn't like it's this new popular creative team. It's going to sell boffo. It's, you know, so I order conservatively.
And, yeah, I remember I had to get the fourth printing number one of this. And there's a reason it got 4 printings, because it's freaking good, really, and good. People bought it.
Yeah. And then, I mean, and that also shows it's not only me that didn't have faith in it, you know, as a retailer.
Right.
But if Marvel had faith in it, why didn't they print more where I could say, oh, this was great, let me reorder some more so I'll have some in a week and a half? Or do I have to wait for another printing?
There's a very dynamic quality to how that all works. It's so quite complicated.
So the next series, the overprint, right?
Yeah,
I think it's a delicate balance. And there was another point I had to make, but I don't want to, you know, sort of, I feel like the horse is dead. This is a great series. It made me a fan of Hawkeye.
Yeah.
You know, and I think understanding from listening to the Battle Axe describe the older versions, you know, I'm sort of not sure if I would go back and read them, but perhaps I would. I don't know. Well, I mean,
two today that I liked.
The great thing about this is you don't need to do both books that we've done today, is you don't need to know anything about the characters, because it's all given to you right here. Mm-hmm. And it's not imprintable like a lot of people feel some comics are.
Yeah, it's not the huge boulder of all the history that is Hawkeye that you have to carry around.
In the next episode, we're going to talk about Wolverine. And I noticed that there's a little bit of that in the 4-book series that we look at, which is sort of what I thought was his first foray on his own, I think, back in like 80. God, I think I remember 82. Reading that in 82. It was 82. Right?
We're going to be reviewing next week, because of the Wolverine movie coming out, we're going to be reviewing the Frank Miller, Chris Claremont 82 series to see if it still holds up 30 years later. The Mark Millar, Steve McNiven series, Old Man Logan, to revisit it 5 years later. And then JP actually recommended me the Wolverine Max series. So we will be running down the first 2 story arcs of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I don't want to get too much into it, but I will say that the 82 version, like every episode, he explains exactly who, you know, it's like in every book, there's the, you know, I have adamantium on all my bones, and I have, you know, and so I wondered, you know, something I'll talk about next week, but like sort of, was that just the thing that they did back then?
And the answer to that, you know, we'll get into it more, is pretty much yes. That was editorial mandate. Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Every book for every series had to give you at least a little bit of, say, oh, my homemade web shooters. I swing around town.
Right.
Because it was their idea that every comic is someone's first.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That makes, yeah. See, I totally buy that. Like, I get it exactly.
So where do you guys sit on the rating scale with this one?
Well, this would be, you know, I would buy every issue that was on the stands. And, you know, we have the first two trades available, so that gets you through every issue that's come out right now.
What is that, up to 12 or 11?
11's through the trades, and then 12 just came out last week.
Right, right. It's a great read. It's a great story. It's a guy that's likable. I mean, he saves the dog, and he's got women troubles. I mean, it's the story of most of our, I think, many of our lives.
He's a real
right?
human being, but he's a real human being that can do heroic things and has some fantastical abilities, but still has to deal with getting injured in life and paying bills and, you know, shitty property managers.
Right, like, exactly.
Everybody's, you know, it all is just so very relatable. And it's nice to see a superhero who doesn't have superpowers, just highly skilled, that's not also crazy rich.
Right.
Because several of the other ones, you know, Marvel or otherwise, are very much like that, where it's like, yeah, okay, fine, you don't have superhero abilities, and yeah, you're a badass, but at the end of the day, you also have all these goodies.
Right. Bow and arrows aren't that expensive, but, you know. I did love the fact that he's got all these cool little different types of arrows, and they kind of make jokes about some of them, like at one point.
The boomerang arrow.
Yeah, like, why would you need a boomerang arrow? And then, of course, you know, she comes up with a need for it.
Sure,
and she's like, oh, I got it. But, yeah.
So are we going to want to rate this one out of five, or...?
I'm going to, whatever the highest rating is, I will.
Let's do it out of five then.
I mean, any comic that has an issue told completely from a dog's perspective.
Which, you know, we kind of alluded to when we talked about the Superior Foes. Everything is a circle with some sort of symbol in it. And, you know, I had to go through a couple of them a couple times to really see if I could figure out what the dog was, you know, thinking. But once you get the flow of it, it's really brilliant. And actually kind of funny.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because there's points in there where it's like the text is just garble, 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 garble. Outside, garble, garble, garble. You know, like girl, garble, garble. Pizza, you know? And so that was like cracking me up. Because I know that's all my dog hears is, you know, blah, 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 blah. Outside, blah, 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 blah. Choo-choo, you know?
Blah, 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 walk.
Yeah. If you walk into my house and you say, is it time to feed the dogs? My dog goes apeshit. It doesn't matter what time it is. Is it time to feed the dogs? It's hilarious. We don't tease them very often. I don't want the SPCA knocking at my door.
So very clearly, I think the takeaway from all of us is that this is a pretty much must read. I mean,
it was really good.
If you're a comic book person, go get this book.
Yeah.
Yeah. John said he would buy every issue. I have bought every issue.
Heck yeah.
So, yeah, coming from me, I guess that's high price.
Oh my God.
Coming from the Battle X.
The Battle X. Hawkeye Ducks.
Awesome. So, I guess next week we'll be talking about Wolverine.
Yeah.
And then going to see Wolverine.
We get both the comics and the movie podcast going on next week.
Yeah, pretty exciting.
Sweet. Yeah. Sweet.
We're actually taking a break from doing a movie podcast this week.
Yes. Yes, we are. Although we could go see RIPD.
Is that out this week now?
I think so. Yeah. Tomorrow night. But
really?
I don't know if I have it in me to do a whole podcast. I wouldn't mind going to see it. I will likely go see it. But I don't know if I want to do the whole orchestrated thing.
Mm-hmm. Well,
I'm just lazy, I guess. I don't know. Gotta have some balance, you know?
There's so many nights you can stay out till 3.
True. I mean, someday this will be all I do with my time, money-wise, but at the moment, you have to also have job.
Yeah. You also have to pay the bills and deal with your girl troubles and take care of the dog.
There's all the cocaine to buy, all the hooker. I mean, you gotta, there's bills, mortgage, that's what I meant.
You gotta deal with the tracksuit mafia.
Bro. That girl trouble, bro.
Podcast, bro.
Bro, walk. Bro, chewy.
Well, thanks for, you know, giving me the opportunity to read this and suggesting it, because, again, you know, I probably should stop saying I'm not a superhero guy.
Because
starting to lean towards, like, I really enjoyed this. And, of course, when we talk about Wolverine next week, I really enjoyed that as well. So
the thing I'm trying to do with this podcast is show that there's a lot of good stuff out there.
Right, right.
That you may not have known was out there. So everyone knows about Watchmen and Spider-Man and...
Yeah, there's those big names, but there is an entire comic book shop completely full of comic books downstairs.
But I love the fact that we talk about the people who write this stuff, too, not just the characters themselves. But I really like the fact that now I know who Greg Rucka is, right? And that there's definitely value in that, because now I'm going to look for stuff that he's done.
Exactly.
Speaking of which, I can't wait for the next Lazarus to come out, right?
Next week?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sweet. Next week's going to be a good week.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, this week is going to be a good week.
Yes, right.
Come today.
Yes. All right, well, is that it for this time? I think
that is it for today.
All right, see you guys next time. very exciting. Can't wait to talk about
the Wolverine.
Right.
Is that, what's the Schnick, how do you spell Schnick, how do you spell the
Schnick.
S-N-I-K-T.
Snicked.
Snicked. Snicked.
Snicked. Awesome.
Snick bro, snick.
Snick bro.
Seriously?
Bro, seriously.
Snick. Bro, snick. Snick.
Alright, enough of this.
See you guys next week. Right.
Good night, bro.
Good night, bro.
Seriously,
that girl trouble, bro.
Podcast, bro.
Podcast, bro. Podcast. Bro. Podcast.